This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so happy to welcome here at the beginning of the year. I'm trying to find inspirational stories and stories that will help you think about this coming year and how we can all make 2023 better. So I was so happy that Eliana Gilad could join us today to talk about her book, Emerge Triumphant, Thrive Through Uncertainty. Hi, Eliana.
Good morning, Patsy with AZ.
It's so nice to have you on the program. Right? What?
Yeah. Zest for 2023.
Yes, that's what we need, some zest. Well, you know, I was so impressed with your book, and I've been reading about your work, and you are a healing voice mentor, which is fascinating, and you're going to explain that to us. And I was just struck with one of the words that came to my mind, which is a favorite, of course, is joy, that you have a joy for life and a joy for helping people. So tell us about this book, and let's go back a little bit also to tell us about how you got there. You know, you had some struggles along the way, but you've certainly made a tremendous impact now in the world.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I'll say that what's coming to mind right now is I'm actually sitting right now in Los Angeles across from the Hollywood sign. That's where I was born and raised. So living through three wars, displacement and social unrest for 20 plus years in the Middle East really taught me in real time how to, and emerging triumphant taught me to thrive through uncertainty, like in real time. And what I discovered during those years, and actually the years prior, I left the U.S. in 1991 during the Great Recession then, and that was jumping into the unknown. But the fear of getting to the end of my life and not knowing why I had been alive and not discovering that joy of living day to day and making a difference terrified me more than the terror of jumping off into the unknown and, you know, that I could fall flat on my face and suffer great humiliation. So, from that jumping off then, you know, to France and having no idea, you know, leaving the corporate world, this is back in 91, to France, and then jumping off into the unknown from France to Israel, and then living through those wars, but each day showing up ever so imperfectly has really taught me that when you listen inside first and stop giving your power away to that inner critic, that it takes you, your answers are inside, you know, you're your own guide, and it will always lead you to great places. And I continue to discover that.
Well, so there you were in Los Angeles, working in the corporate world, and something happened that you got up and went on this adventure. Because it certainly was. And I know that for myself, I'll tell you later on about a little bit of my life in Israel. But it was a big decision to do this. And then you picked France to start your sort of awakening.
Yeah. Well, no, the awakening began with the sudden death of my father overnight, and I spent my 21st birthday celebrating my birthday at his funeral instead of going overseas, which was my plan. You know how life has, we have our plans, and then the gods laugh. You know, his life is bigger than us. But that's when the awakening began at 21 years old. And then the jumping off in 91, what the impetus for that was, my job was being made redundant. I was laid off. And they said, we're not firing you, we're just not continuing your position, and look for another job. And I thought, if I look for another job, I'm going to die. And, you know, here all these years later, as I listen, at this point, I've worked with, I don't know, more than 10,000 conscious entrepreneurs and professionals, you know, to help them find their true voice and to silence their inner critic and to thrive through uncertainty. And, you know, maybe some of the listeners, you know, maybe you're contemplating your next act, you know, in retirement, which I don't really even relate to, because retirement connotes being put out to pasture, you know, like your value is at doing whatever you do, and then you're like done. And I'm just getting started. I left that lifestyle 30 plus years ago. And what I find is that, now in middle age, it's like, I'm just getting started. In fact, I am on my way out of the U.S. and I'm moving to Portugal. I bought a house in Portugal. And I didn't plan to do that. It happened this summer while I was visiting, contemplating my own next act. I'm so excited.
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, I also started off making adventures in my life and traveling and making my own way and discovering myself along the way. And I had so much fun with all of that. So I really appreciate it. You know, it's a big step, for when you're in an American girl and you decide, I'm going to go. And you go, all your friends and family are surprised. They say, where are you, when are you going to be back?
Oh, yeah, they'll send you to the loony bin because it stirs them up. I know, because it's terrifying. But that's why I feel so, I remember back in 91, when I was being laid off and they told me to look for another job, decide what I want to do. And, at that point, ever since I was a little girl, do you know that sense of there's something inside that's pulling you? You don't have words for it. It doesn't make sense, but it's pulling you. But we don't act upon it because it doesn't make sense. And then, we get the kickback from outside. But I remember thinking, in another 20, 30 years, everything's changing. The whole world's going to fall apart as we know it. And if I make my changes now, when that happens, 20, 30 years from now, then I'll already be on the other side and I'll be able to be of service to other people. I'll really be able to help in a much... There'll be meaning in life. I didn't understand what that meant. But because I followed that trajectory, just one day at a time, I didn't understand it. But I have found that acting upon the thing that is that inkling inside, in fact, in my second TED Talk, it's like that whole TED Talk is about it. It's called Trust Your Silent Voice. You didn't go, that was so empowering to me to prepare for that one. But I found that listening to that is what actually brings the confidence. That's what silences the terror. Because the fear is there whether you move forward or not. But when you feel the fear and move ahead anyway, it's just, there's magic in it. And it's so funny because, you know, 30 years later, here I am, you know, helping others to make those changes. And since making this new change myself, I'm feeling more inspired to, like, excited to be a support to others. Because I've lived the majority of my adult life overseas, and I've lived and worked on 3 continents and 3 different languages. And we Americans aren't inculcated or educated in a world outside of these borders.
I know. You know, it was so funny for most of my family, my friends, they only got their passports so that they could come and visit me wherever I was. You know, they had not traveled themselves. So the first time they ever got a passport was because I invited them to come and visit me.
Where were you?
Well, I was also England, Iran, Israel, and all over Europe. So I was also in lots of places. So, but that my family and friends would get passports only because they were coming to visit me. Now,
there you are. Yeah, there you are, really.
Yeah, and I think, and they were all happy that I invited them. Now, you found it with your voice. Tell us about this. I didn't have a good voice, so I never got. But this is interesting, how you've discovered voice. About, and tell us about the chanting, and tell us what you do to inspire people.
Yeah, so, our voice is the bridge between our inner clarity, our inner truth, and our outer expression. And when your physical voice is disconnected from your inner truth, it disconnects from your outer, it disconnects you from what's good for you. I don't mean good isn't good or bad, right? I don't mean this is a judgment. I'll give an example. An experience of, so you're calling the airlines, or you're calling the T-Mobile, Verizon, you know, the telephone company, you know, some company for service, and you get the service person after holding online for an hour and a half, right? And that person is either reading, you can tell whether they are present with you or they're reading from the script. You communicate what's going on, the help you need, and you are responded to with a script being repeated by a robot human being who's absent. How do you respond?
I probably hang up.
You know, you want to tear your hair out, right? You know, you have a conversation, even with a loved one, or, you know, with a friend, or with your kid. You know, the words are there, but you can tell whether there's somebody else in the other room. You can tell the words may sound great, but the words may sound pretty, but what you're experiencing is anger. You can tell whether they're frustrated, whether they're with you, whether they're with doing something else. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so that's an example of our voice being disconnected from who we are. And look at the impact that it has. We victimize ourselves inadvertently by not learning, and it's no one's fault because we are not educated about this. And it's my role in life to help people reconnect those two disconnected things.
Now, in the book, Emerge Triumphant, you have some like worksheets where you give people the opportunity to answer questions and to think about what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great concept. And what do you want people to get from this book?
To hear their inner voice.
Now, when you...
It's not a cognitive book. It's a book that is that helps you to hear yourself. Like, for example, that example that I gave before about, you know, if you have an inkling about something, you have a hunch about something, but you don't have words for it, the book has questions that will help you get to that clarity, that help you bypass the intellect. And see, you know, most of the time when we're speaking, we're reacting to our mind, to our brain, and to voices which aren't even our own, that we took in, you know, in our childhood, and they get programmed in, and then they're just running on a loop, and we react to those. We're not even listening to ourselves. We're reacting to this tape in our brain. And in a fun, easy, relaxing way, this book, you could open it to any page. It's not sequential either. And
well, there's
kind of
there's so much wisdom in this book. And look, you know, you have here, tell us about Miriam and about Miriam's role in history, which is, of course, throughout the book, you're talking about Miriam and about feminism. Tell us why this is so important to you.
Well, the importance of feminine power, and that doesn't mean women or men, because, you know, every human being has, and when I'm referring to feminine power, I'm referring to the visceral, I'm referring to the hunch, I'm referring to the what's visceral and experienced versus what's thought. And Miriam is a archetype of feminine leadership. She was, in fact, she was the one who prophesied Moses' birth. And I'm born Levite tribe. I'm an unbroken tribe of five. At this year, it's 5,738 years. So it's like in my blood, in my pores. And in ancient times, there were the leaders would avail themselves. They would go to the temples. This is before Judaism. This is before, it's beyond religion. It doesn't have anything to do with a dogma or religion. It's just how we humans live for thousands and tens and thousands of years, many, much longer than our modern era, which you know, for these last 2,000-3,000 years. Leaders would go to temples and avail themselves of special of sonic applications, vibrations that would bypass intellect and align them with their higher mind beyond the cognitive, that would rest calm, connect them to their inner clarity, and help them to then know how to take a next step, you know, to make a decision, to act appropriately. This was how we lived. In those times, we were much more sophisticated in our use of sound. Sound was used for healing, for architecture, for spiritual medical purposes. And I devoted my life and my entire career to the resurgence of this ancient way. And in the book, I refer to Miriam to represent the little that is written about her. Taking those examples to connect them to our modern day and problem solving and addressing our angst and anxiety and fears over all of the changes that are happening today. Because then, you know, as the Hebrews went from slavery in Egypt, crossed the seas, and were in the desert for 40 years. That was like two, three generations of human life during those days. It took that time for them to then get to the Holy Land. They were in the desert. We've been 3 years in the desert. You know, so what's happening today is really, I see, akin to, there's such parallels to that story of going from slavery into freedom. And if we look at it from a wider angle lens, that humanity, we're moving from this slavery of our reactivity in our minds and on our way to an more expansive way of being.
Where can people hear some of your healing music?
You can go to voicesofeden.com. And actually, if you go to voicesofeden.com/book, which is where the book is, there is a beautiful little video there that with music that was composed and recorded at one of these ancient healing sites in Galilee. And this therapeutic singing way or healing voice way, it's not what we know of when we think of music. There's no performance here, and practitioners, you know, who are certified, they're not professional singers. Well, actually, some of them are, but it's not about a performance. And what I love is they draw in, you know, people who have no experience, and it's not about singing. It's about connecting to your perfectly perfect
connecting self. your inner self to the sound, which can
exactly
take you away. It's like for people who have, it's perhaps deeper, but just like when you're in synagogue or you're in church and the music can just take you to another place.
Exactly. That's so beautiful what you're saying. Yeah. But what happens when you don't go into you're not religious. You're not, you don't go to a synagogue. You don't go to a church.
So this makes it something that anybody can listen to. Anybody can just find healing from it and find that inner peace. And they need to get your book. It's called Emerge Triumphant. Thrive Through Uncertainty, Emerge Triumphant. It's by Eliana Gilad. And we didn't get to talk about your experiences in the war in Israel. I know I was there in 2002 during, when they had, in March, when they had the Passover event, and it was so terrible. And I was also in a couple of other bombings in Israel over the years, and terrorist things. So I know how traumatic it is, and I'm glad that you found healing with your words and helping other people. As you said, you helped over 10,000 people. So I'm really just so honored that you joined me today on Joy on Paper. Eliana, I think you're terrific. I think the idea is wonderful. And people, again, tell your website.
Excuse me. voicesofeden.com/book.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. And just next time you have another book, you come back to Joy on Paper, okay?
Great. Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay. Bye-bye. Wow. Very interesting book. You have to get it. We'll just go straight to commercials because I have another guest coming up in a little while from Kensington, and I'm always happy to talk to authors from Kensington.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And I am just wild about the next author, because her name is Darcy Wild, and she is a national best-selling author of The Secret of the Lost Pearls. Hi, Darcy.
Hey, Patsy. So glad to be here.
Okay, well, it's nice. I love your name. And as I said, I'm wild about this book. And
thank you.
It is one of your useful woman mystery. Well, women are useful. I'm glad to hear that. Nice. That's nice. And, well, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, I will talk to anyone who starts every chapter with a Jane Austen quote. So you got me right there.
Yes, I am a huge fan of the great Jane.
Me too.
And Pride and Prejudice, of course. Probably her greatest.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. Well, controversy?
No. I will agree. But it is so exciting. When I got the book, why I am a Jane Austen fan, you have to know that when I was 21 years old, I moved to England, bought a house 30 minutes from where she was born. That's how big a fan.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's hardcore.
That's hardcore fan. And I spent many a day taking many people to picnic right there where she was born. So when I got this, I got such a kick out of it. Now, of course, I love that, you know, this is also subtitled a Riveting Regency Historical Mystery. And that's great. And just in case people don't know Regency, explain a little bit.
Okay, well, the Regency period was the time in England between about 1809 and 1820. And it gets its name because during that time, King George III basically went insane. They now think he had a disease called porphyria. But he wasn't dead, but he couldn't rule. So Parliament appointed his son, also named George, as a regent, kind of like the vice president stepping in if the president became incapacitated. And even though George III was still king, his son, who was Prince George, was running the show. And that lasted for 9 years, and that period is known as the Regency.
And there is so much romance literature, because there was so much romance during the period. And and now, of course, everybody's interested in royalty, and we have another Prince George. So I think that people will enjoy this connection to the past. What sparked your interest in the Regency period?
Well, Jane Austen. I think that was an entryway for a lot of us. I fell in love, I admit, not through the books, but through the adaptation of Pride and Prejudice with back in the 90s, yes, I'm that old, with Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy. And I was smitten, I was in love, and I realized it was ridiculous that I had never actually read Jane Austen. And my husband, he was just my boyfriend at the time, went out and bought me the collected works of Jane Austen. And that's why I married him. Okay, that's not entirely why I married him, but it was a help. And I blew straight through all of them and, you know, never looked back. And of course, I also am a fan of romance. The genre, and I love romances set in the Regency. I read all the Julia Quinn, The Basis for Bridgerton now, which is they're making that fantastic Netflix adaptation of. And I love the period. And, you know, I'm a history nerd, so I love the intrigue. I love the drama of it. I love, you know, all of that stuff.
And so you came out with a great character, Rosalind Thorne, and tell us about her, because, as you said, it is nice to know that a woman can be useful.
Yeah, well, in the Regency, we're looking at that. The book started in 1816. There were a lot of challenges for a woman. Rosalind was born in a great situation. Her father was in the aristocracy, he was wealthy, she had the big house, she was meeting a lot of family, so she was getting all the good connections. She fell in love with someone who was in line to become a duke, So she was set. The only problem was her father actually didn't have any money, and he was skating on charm. And when the debts piled up too high, he vanished, took her older sister with him, and left her and her mom to deal with the guys who were banging on the door looking for their money. So suddenly Rosalind has got to figure out a way to make a living in a world that doesn't allow women like her to work for money. So it turns out that what happened in these situations is that the women who found themselves, you know, abandoned or destitute, their friends would rally around them. And their friends would start inviting them to stay at their houses, you know, for long periods of time, a month, 2 months. And it was kind of like couch surfing. They'd be couch surfing between these larger houses. And these friends would loan them dresses, would loan them carriages, so they could stay part of that lifestyle. And in return, what these women would do would be they would help out. They would help out with social calendars. They would help out running parties. Or, if you're Rosalind Thorne and it turns out you're good at it, they'd help out with things like blackmail or murder and get you out of those situations. And the name, what these women were called, what their friends would say, is, oh, they've become such a useful woman. And when I found that and I found out about that, I knew instantly I had to write about this character and about this situation because I had not seen it done before.
No, and neither had I, and because usually they land up being governesses.
Yes.
And, you know, yes. Yeah, and I didn't, so that this is so much better because they stay upstairs as mm-hmm. opposed to being, you know, the servants. So they mix with the right people.
Mm-hmm. And what makes this great for a sleuth is Rosalind knows everybody because she's circulated among all these families, because she has maintained her reputation. You know, she's been able to keep up appearances. She's talked to everybody. She knows everybody. She knows who to go to get the gossip.
Oh, it's delicious gossip. You get some really delicious gossip in there, I tell you.
Well, you know, again, only following Jane Austen's example, I mean, what are the best parts of those books? It's the gossip and the banter.
It is. And you've captured a lot of that. It's really great.
Thank you.
And then you throw in a lot of little twisty-turny things and give us a nice array of potential suspects here.
Well, I grew up on mysteries. I started in on mysteries from reading my grandmother's Agatha Christie. And I love a traditional mystery. I love a puzzle. I love a situation where, you know, the clues are there, where you can figure it out. But you know, I'm usually wrong. I'm not very good at other people's stories. But there's a lot of possibilities, and I like them to be, you know, believable. You know, I like them to arise really from character motivation. So I try and really pay attention to, you know, what do the characters want? What is driving them so hard that they might actually kill somebody, which is, you know, a huge line to cross. So, you know, I like to keep that very sharp and very in focus. And of course, that's what Rosalind is good at, is people. Because she knows everybody, because she'll talk to anybody, and because she understands the way relationships work, what she's really good at figuring out is that crucial motivation. Why would somebody do this?
Well, you know, the way you lay out the story and the interesting characters, it makes for a really fun read. And I was so, as I said, it was so much fun to see the quotes at the beginning of each chapter. I thought it was just that was must have been fun to do. And there's quite a bit of research that you had to do for this book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, the Regency is a fascinating time. I mean, for this one specifically, first of all, it was an excuse to go back and reread Pride and Prejudice. And I love Pride and Prejudice. I love the adaptations, but you know, Jane Austen's writing is so sharp and just so clear, and I love it when, you know, I people are going to get the wrong idea about me, but I do love, she is so cutting. I heard somebody else say she knows who the bad guys are, and she makes sure you know who the bad guys are, and she has got a world of glorious, you know, snarky commentary. So, you know, so didn't need to twist my arm. That was fabulous. And going through and calling out the quotes was a lot of fun. But, yeah, there was a lot going on in the Regency, and the world was a lot different than the one around us now. Policing was entirely different. The social structure, the limits on what a woman can do and can't do and where she can be and when she can be there were very, very strict. So there's choreography involved in every one of these about, you know, who can go where and when they can go and what they can see. So that's when I'm working on any one of these, I have to be I have to kind of plot out every scene so I can know, you know, not only who needs to be where, but who can be there.
And of course, then you have all of the other things, the clothes, the food.
Yes.
The room, the decorations in the room. Oh, and you managed to really draw a picture for us so that we really feel that we're there.
Yes. Well, the lucky for me, the Regency was really the birth of the modern novel. So for a history nerd, you not only have, you know, the great Jane to go on, but Jane Austen had a ton of contemporary writers around her who were busy inventing the novel, most of them women. And so I read a lot of those, and I've looked at their descriptions of clothes and of meals. Because if you read Jane Austen, she's all about the dialogue. She does not include a lot of descriptions of clothes or of food, so I had to go elsewhere to other writers at the time who, and diaries. There are a ton of diaries from the time period. So they talk about the meals and the parties and the people. So I've looked into all of that for this series. And it's a lot of fun. Again, you know,
I think the research is so much fun for a novel, and particularly something like this, where you really get into the period. It's just absolutely, it makes it so worthwhile to be a writer. You really, even if you know, it just gives you that joy. When I write about the joy on paper, when I call this program, that's the joy, because it's not just the joy of the writing process, but the joy of the research process. And then knowing that people are going to read it and get as excited as you do. So it's just a wonderful feeling, isn't it?
That is actually my favorite part of what I do. I am always learning something new. I am always discovering something new. When I found the concept of the useful woman, it was buried in the pages of another novel of the time, and the light that comes over you when you realize this is that nugget. This can be turned into something really, you know, fun and interesting.
It's so exciting. As Hercule Poirot would say, you are using your gray cells.
Exactly.
And that's the best thing. That's what one of the reasons people should write and people should read, because it keeps your gray cells busy and active and, you know, just going to, you know, sparkling in your brain and keeping your mind active is the best thing you can to avoid, you know, aging too quickly. So
absolutely.
And I think that you've done a wonderful job with this book. And I love your husband. I love I love that he got you the Jane Austen books.
Who buys you books.
That when I first got married, my husband was traditional, and you know when from the day I met him, he would be buying me jewelry, Mm-hmm. He'd buy me, you know, and I landed up with diamonds and sapphires and rubies and opals and all sorts of, you know, lovely things, lots of gold. And then one day he bought me a book. He finally realized, I mean, I only stop like at every bookstore we ever passed. He realized, all I have to do is get her a book, you know. I mean, it was so easy. And then after that, oh boy. But actually he had to do some research himself to make sure that he'd get me, he'd always get me a book that was really something special. So it's funny, the way to a girl's heart is through a book.
Yeah, is through the bookshop. Now, see, I like your husband because that all shows he was paying attention to you as a person.
Exactly.
And that's love.
Oh,
absolutely.
That's love.
People, you know, they want to know, how do I win a person? Like, pay attention to her as a person.
And, you know, I kept getting books and books. And by the time we left Europe, we lived in England and other places. Mm-hmm. And I came back. We brought a container. I had a container of books. And for years he asked me, what do you, he, just, you know, do you have a plan?
Plan?
And, no. And I didn't actually until I got this strange, marvelous idea to do a radio program at 4 o'clock one morning. I said, I know why I'm collecting all these books. Why? At one point, I had 3,642 books. And it was all because somewhere in the back of my mind, I never thought about it, but it came to me. And there I am with a radio program. And I get to talk to wonderful people like you. Darcy Wild, I'm wild about you. And people, Darcy is spelled with an I-E, D-A-R-C-I-E, and Wild with an E. And you can just remember, you will be wild about Darcy, too. So do you have a website you want people to go to, Darcy?
I do. It's darcywildauthor.com. And you can also search on Darcy Wild Author. And you'll find me on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, and this one is called The Secret of the Lost Pearls. We did not give any of the exciting things that happened in this book away. People, you have to start reading it, and you'll find out why those pearls were lost, and you're going to get a murder along the way. And then Darcy's going to keep you turning the pages as she writes more and more about the Regency period. And you can learn a little bit about... well, you know, it's wonderful that we have another Prince George, and he is a cutie, isn't he?
Well, by this time, he's a little bit of an older cutie, but in his day, oh, heck yeah, he got around, Prince George.
Okay, well, Darcy, again, and I want to thank so much Kensington, because they are so wonderful. And
They are just
so terrific, and particularly Larissa Ackerman. I have to just give her a shout out. She is fantastic, and she is just amazing. And she called in here. You know, I had a Carol J. Perry day. Carol is also a Kensington author, and back on October 25th, I had the entire day was for Carol J. Perry, and Larissa called in to say hello to her, and so it was so exciting, and I love Larissa, and I want to thank her, especially to get you here at the beginning of the year. I want to start off with a bang here in the Regency period. You're a terrific, terrific writer, Darcy.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me. This has been just a delight.
Okay, well, Happy New Year, and I know I don't have to ask you if you're writing. I mean, I know you're writing.
Oh, yes. Always something.
Okay, so when the next book comes out, you'll be here on Pub Day, okay?
Oh, thank you so much. I'd love to be back.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, this is fun. I love this book. I love books set in England. I love books that remind me of England. I just love books. In general, I'm not sad at all. Oh, can you imagine here? I've got a whole year of more books and more books and more books. And I tell you, the publishers, I want to thank the publishers, too. I have to thank them. I am getting so many books. And just thank all of you, publicists and publishers, for sending me all these wonderful authors. I'm having so much fun. It's really hard to select. I could have 8 books a day if I had the time. But I have to read them first, because I do read all the books that I talk about, because I don't want to send you to something that I don't like. And both of these books that I talked about are really fascinating. And again, I want to say about Emerge Triumphant, I think you will find that it does have a healing element to it. Learn about the chanting, learn about what Eliana discovered through voice. And she has, as she mentioned, TED Talks, and you can check out her TED Talks, which are also fascinating. And I will put a link on my website, which is radio-joyonpaper. You can go there. I will put a link. Well, I will put the interviews up, but I will also put a link to Eliana's voice. This is really a spiritual thing that she has there, and it's fascinating. Okay, wow. The hour's gone very quickly today. I've had lots of fun. I was very happy that Darcy was so moved by Jane Austen. And so this year, I'm trying to think of what I wanted to do. I want to do Jane Eyre this year. Okay, so Charlotte Bronte, I'm going to be, over the next week or so, I'm going to set it out, and I'd like people to join me in reading Jane Eyre and talking about it, so that by the end of the year, it depends on how fast you read, I don't know. You know, some people will take longer. But if you just read a little bit of Jane Eyre, a few chapters a day, it won't take you long. And then we can talk about it. Because remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. And then meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And that's because I should have been a general. And in my mind, I am a general, because I guess I am a little bit bossy sometimes. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Stay warm and stay dry if you're out west. Everybody, bye-bye now.